The Warrior Soul podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas to U.S. military veterans and anybody else willing to listen to help them to navigate toward living their absolute best lives. If you find these episodes helpful, please share them out with somebody that you know of that can use them. And if you really like the podcast, please also head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and a review. It really helps us to spread word about the show, and it really helps to get these tools in the hands of others who really need them. This podcast is sponsored by F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate, with sea salt, with pecan butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they also have a number of other fat-fueled snacks, like their meat sticks and their cheese crisps. They're amazing people who are sending boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front lines, and they're offering 20% off to our listeners on their first orders. If you head over to www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul at checkout, you'll get 20% off of that first order. And I'm going to keep the announcements short and sweet today. If you can, stick around to the end. I got a really special announcement about a brotherhood that we're creating here at Warrior Soul. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you get a lot out of it. And without delay, let's get into it.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's a solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What is going on, ladies and gents? First off, I want to wish you a very, very happy Veterans Day. Today is 11 November, the day on which we honor those who have put on a uniform and signed a contract to put their lives on the line for this country if need be. And as a veteran-oriented podcast, it is my great honor to be serving you guys, to be doing this show week in and week out to help you to make the best out of this life. One thing I think, though, that is extremely important is to remember something. And that is to remember that no matter how hard any of us had it, there was a generation of young men who did what many considered at the time to be impossible. And what I'm talking about are the generation of men who served during World War II. Particularly those who would jump off of airplanes or get off of boats and head out into what was basically a wall of lead, attacking nested machine guns that had every opportunity in the world to lay out their fields of fire onto beaches that were completely, completely dialed in by the enemy supporting artillery. That happened, of course, in the Pacific over and over again through the island hopping campaign. And it also happened on the beaches of Normandy during D-Day. Our guest today is somebody who has been on this show before. His name is Michael Reagan, and he is the son of former President Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan has a special place, I believe, in American history. As a president who was a unifier, as a president who was really, really in love with America, And he did his best to honor those veterans of that great generation who saved the world by actually going to Normandy on the anniversary of D-Day. And now the Reagan Legacy Foundation has built something called the Walkway to Victory. Michael came on last year to talk about the walkway, and we wanted to bring him back on this year because I think it's so important that we remember. We need to remember that at one point, the world as we know it was in jeopardy. And it was because of those brave men who were willing to charge those machine gun nests, who were willing to charge into hell, that we are all sitting today in this amazing country where absolutely anything is possible. So with that, I'm not going to delay any longer. Let's get into this conversation with Michael Reagan to talk about the great things that the Reagan Legacy Foundation is doing to preserve that history. Michael Reagan, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you.
Awesome. We had you on last year to talk about the Walkway to Victory. And I got to say, I was just up in Solvang, California, and I was walking down a street that your father had actually dedicated while he was governor of California. It was called the Avenue of the Flags. And I went into the museum there and dedicated it in, I think, 1968. And he talked about how amazing it was to see just the sea of flags that was around him. And it reminded me of this project that you've been working on for so long, because just this sheer love of the country that your father had, and understanding that what you guys do there at the Reagan Legacy Foundation by creating this Walkway to Victory and by preserving our history, I mean, essentially, you're reminding us of the sacrifice that so many young men made in World War II when they saved the world, literally.
Yeah, and that's what I certainly hope it does. And I know the effect it has on family members and or friends or on the participants who can look down and see their name on a brick dedicated to them there at St. Mary Glees at the Airborne Museum. I mean, it really brings tears to their eyes when they see it. And I just, you know, I can't help myself but really tear up. And talk about the Avenue of the Flags. That's in Buellton, California.
Yep.
And I just rededicated that on the anniversary.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. I was there rededicating it to Avenue of the Flags in Buellton, California. So that's a good analogy. It's really, you know, it's about America. It's about honoring those who came before us, and not forgetting what others have done, which allow us to do the things that, in fact, we do.
Absolutely. And, you know, the audience you're talking to right now, a lot of us have served in the military. A lot of us are combat veterans. And I think, you know, one of the things we have to remember is that going into Normandy on D-Day, we've seen the movies, we've seen the imagery, but actually having to have been there and to have been on, you know, one of the boats coming in and seeing the shore and seeing how embedded the enemy was and seeing the obstructions and, you know, a lot of these guys were 17 years old. And the amount of combat they got into, and not just them, I mean, the people who served in the Pacific as well, the Marines and the soldiers who served in the Pacific, but those were some brave young men. I mean, I can't imagine what it must have been like. And even those of us who've served in combat today, I don't think could imagine the scale of what that was.
Oh, the scale was so very enormous that day and the build up to that day, D-Day. It really was. And you go visit places like you know, Guadalcanal, or you visit Normandy, where they had the Battle of the Bulge and what have you. You just see what these men went through as kids, as 17-year-old kids, if you will. It's amazing what they did. I tell people, you know, when I'm talking about history or whatever, I said the best history lesson you give your kids is take them. You know, you've been to Paris, drive 3 hours north and go up there, go to Normandy, stand there at Point de Hoc, or go to Omaha Beach, or go to Sword Beach, go up there and look at it, and, you know, and understand what they had to accomplish in order to win the war. And it started there at Normandy, France. And I think my dad really understood that so much too, because I grew up with a dad who driving out to the ranch on any given Saturday morning to go ride horses and shoot ground squirrels and go swimming and chop wood. But I used to listen to him sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic, or he would sing every military anthem. I would hear it in the car on the way out. I mean, he was like a Boy Scout, this guy. And he lived, you know, truly what he believed. And I think that's what took him to Normandy, to be the first president to actually go to Normandy on D-Day and give the speech he gave at Point de Hoc. No other president ever been there on D-Day. And, of course, now every president since my father has picked D-Day to be the day that they go to Normandy, France. And that's wonderful that they followed on in those footsteps, because those men, you know, who served in the women, you know, they're going every day. They're disappearing. Mm-hmm. They're passing. They're 99, 100, 101, 102 years of age. And to find a way to honor them today with the Walkway to Victory that we've partnered with the Airborne Museum, to me, is just the least that we can do.
Right. And another thing is to remember that, you know, at that point in the war, I mean, there were no foregone conclusions as to who was going to win. And I think that's something we need to remember as well, because, you know, and we look at it, I think we look back on it today, and it's almost like we live in this world that was handed to us. And I think we forget that it was handed to us by a generation of great Americans who truly laid it all on the line. And, you know, when I was thinking about, and it was in Buellton, California, and I was in the museum just above P. Soup Anderson's, and for your father to have done that in 1968, you know, when he was governor, and then carried that spirit over into his presidency, I think that's what made him such a great president. And that's what, you know, I think that's a spirit that so many of us wish could be emulated over and over again.
Yeah, he was just, he was someone who, he could not believe that an American would ever think of going overseas, mm-hmm. and blaming America for anything. It just galled him that somebody would point a finger at America and blame us for ills in the world. Because he would say, where would the world be without us? I mean, we are the United States of America. We're important to the rest of the world. We're a free country. I know when I go up to my dad's library in Simi Valley, and I love going up there, and there's always groups of kids going through, fifth graders and sixth graders and seventh graders going through, and I'll always catch up with them someplace. A lot of times I'll get them right there in front of the, just outside the door where you have the Berlin Wall. Mm-hmm. And one side of it's all colorful and butterflies. But I always tell the kids, as they're looking at that and taking pictures and with their teacher, I said, go to the back side. Go around the other side of that. I said, because the photos you just took of the butterflies and the pretty colors, That was West Berlin. They were free. They were free. Go to the backside and look at the backside, because that's the side that wasn't free.
Right.
And it's like a lesson to these kids. And then I sit them down and I said, I want to take you back to 1961, August 12th, 1961. You're at school. You're in fifth grade. You come home from school and you say to your mom, Aunt Sophie invited me to come over to her place tonight and see a movie and have dinner. And your mother says to you, oh, wonderful, honey. Tell my sister I love her. And if it gets to be too late, spend the night. So you go, August 12th, 1961. You go to Aunt Sophie's. You see a movie. You spend the night. You come home November of 1989.
Yeah.
That's how quickly you can lose your freedom. And these kids just look at you and they don't believe it, that it can happen that quickly. And all we can do is try to educate mm-hmm. our youth, the next generation, about how quickly they can lose their freedom and how important America is and how important it is to honor those who came before us, who are willing to fight and give of themselves for our freedoms and the things that we are able to do today. But we've got to hand that down. And too often, I think we look to school to educate our kids, and they're certainly not doing that.
Right.
Especially right. when I play golf with a young man, I think I told you last year, who thought, you know, didn't know why there was an American cemetery at Normandy at all. He didn't know. Had no idea.
Yeah.
I just looked at him. I went, you're kidding. He wasn't kidding. He had no idea. He was 28 years old, had no idea why there was an American cemetery in Normandy. And so, you know, you can't count on the educators at schools to educate our children on the greatness of America and of those that came before us. We got to do it ourselves.
Right.
And right. if we and don't, it's a, not going to get better.
That's a big reason why organizations like the Reagan Legacy Foundation are so important. The work that you're doing to preserve that legacy, to preserve that history, so that it does get taught, so it does get out to the American population. Because, you know, even though we're actually not that far removed from World War II, it is amazing how much that knowledge actually gets lost.
Yeah. It's... yeah, I was just there. I was just at Normandy in July of this year. Mm-hmm. And to go there and see the bricks and see the names. And in fact, a couple of people were with us. We had about 40 people we took with us. And a couple of people came along just because they had purchased bricks and wanted to come with us so they could see the brick that they had purchased in the name of a loved one. And it was interesting because I called and I said, make sure that brick's in the ground. Because I have friends coming with me, dear friends, who bought a brick. And if that brick's not there, they will hit me with another brick. Make sure it's in the ground. But again, if the people want to go see it. And what we've set up, is I have a friend of mine, Phil, who loves the walkway to victory idea. He said, but I don't know anybody, Blake. I don't know anyone. I just don't. I said, that's okay, Phil. I said, how many bricks would you like to buy? He said, four. I said, good. That's $1,000, $250 a brick. Mm-hmm. And I said, send a check to the Reagan Legacy Foundation in the memo, put brick project. Mm-hmm. And I said, I will get the names, four names that'll go on those bricks, and send you the information on those four soldiers so you will know who you just supported. And, you know, I called my good friend Diane Height, Forever Young, got four names, having the bricks being made now, sent him the information and the thank you from the four soldiers, and it brought tears to his eyes. He said, I got to do more. But again, that's a way he could... In fact, work with the project was, I'm going to sponsor someone. I may not know him, but you find the name, I'm in. And it's just really a nice thing to do and be able to see.
That is amazing. That is amazing. And, you know, walking around a place like that as well, you get to see the geographic gravity of the situation. I mean, I remember I was a Marine stationed in Okinawa, Japan, and I would walk around that island and I would be astounded by the fact that we ever took that island, just because of the cliff sides and the things like that. And, you know, when you go to a place like Normandy and you could see the shore and you could see what they had to cross over and you could see where the embankments were, that's when I think it truly hits you. You know, that was an insane venture, but it's one that we were able to do.
Yeah, one of the soldiers we sponsored for the 70th anniversary, we sponsored, I think, 24 or 25 D-Day vets to be able to go back for the 70th anniversary. And one of them was really interesting because Diane, again, hi, who works with them, and we work with her too. He went up to her and said, "Yeah, Diane, this is great being here for the 70th anniversary. I know you got plans to take a group of us to you know the anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge." He says, "But can I just tell you something?" Diane says, "What's that?" He says, "We were there in November. We don't want to be there on the anniversary. Can we go in the summer? It's really cold in November where we had the Battle of the Bulge. We've done that. But now we're like 95 years old. We don't want to be there on the anniversary. Just tell us about the anniversary. Can we go in like August?"
Come in, you know, sip some wine. And
Diane looked at it and said, "I didn't think about that." I said, "Yeah, really?" I said, they're not 17 at the Battle of the Bulge in freezing, no, snowy weather. They're now 95 years old. And they're saying, "God, I don't want to die there."
You know? Exactly, exactly. You know, and this brings up another good point. This episode is going to be published on November 11th, Veterans Day. And, you know, as we're coming up, you know, like you mentioned, we're losing a lot of our World War II generation very mm-hmm. quickly. We've been losing them for a while. Do you know how many World War II vets are still alive right now?
Boy, I wish I could tell you. Not a lot. You know, it's that's why what they've done with Normandy, that's why, you know, they used to have the celebration every 10 years. Now they've made it every 5. Because if they wait 10, there's going to be come a day in not too distant future where there's going to be no one left standing.
Yeah.
Except for what we can do to memorialize them, you know, in this project there at Normandy, France. That's all we can do. And it's, I don't know if they sent you a photo. There's one photo of, the group sitting in chairs looking down at the brick project, and Diane's on her knees pointing out a brick to one of the guys, and he just got tears in his eyes because he sees his name. Somebody's going to remember him.
Yeah, that's I mean, just going there with them must be so, I mean, the emotion, the being carried back to when they were young, when they were fighting, that must have been, I mean, I'm thinking about it right now. I'm just getting my tears coming up in my eyes.
Well, I almost get embarrassed to think, because they come up to me and, mm-hmm. and because of my dad, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, they call me, sir, and they salute me, and I'm going, no. I salute you. But you're the son of Ronald Reagan. And it's, it is, you sit there and they have the respect they have. And it's, I wish you could bottle the respect they have had then and still have today, bottle it and give it to this generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I think with my generation of veterans, there's so many lessons I think we can learn from that generation. You know, they came back and so many of them went on to do so many amazing things and building businesses, you know, working jobs that were so important to keeping America on track and, you know, bringing a lot of those values back home. And I think that for my generation of vets, I see us doing that, and I wish we were doing it on a bigger scale and taking charge. And that's a lot of what this podcast is about, which is motivating our current generation of veterans to take charge of their lives and to really impact this country in a positive way. And
you know, speaking about that, one of the soldiers that we sponsor and what have you, he was from Pennsylvania. When he got out of the war, he went back to Pennsylvania, and him and a buddy has started changing oil in cars to make a living, mm-hmm. and that's what they're doing. But they got tired of crawling underneath the car, so what they did is they just dug a hole in the ground, and then they had the cars just drive over the top of them, and they changed the oil that way. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, "Well, that's a good idea." So they, you know, they did it. They opened another one and another one and another one, and ultimately sold the idea. Today they have a company called Jiffy Lube.
Yeah.
You know, so it's amazing. You talk about coming back, though. There's a great Netflix, maybe you see it, the Netflix show called Five Came Back. Steven Spielberg produced it. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest it is great to watch. It's a story of five directors, Bill Wyler and Stevens and John Huston and John Ford and Frank Capra. Mm-hmm. These are five directors, major Hollywood directors. Careers were unbelievable, who gave up their careers to join the military for the war. And they're the ones who did the filming. The film that we see, the videos that we see of the concentration camps and what have you, that's these guys. Mm-hmm. They were the first ones in. But they gave up their careers to go there in the war and help. And there's a great, great story on Netflix called Five Came Back. It's really worthwhile to sit there and watch and see their stories of each one of them. And they're not the only ones. You have some great, you know, great actors and actors, Jimmy Stewart and Yogi Berra.
Yep.
You know, yeah. You don't think of Yogi Berra in uniform. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You think of him in a Yankees uniform, but you don't think of him in a uniform. So you got Yogi. Yeah, you got Yogi in there. You got Jimmy Stewart. You got Joe DiMaggio.
Yep.
No. And these guys who gave up careers to be in the military. And I mean, I look today and I see the young man from the Arizona Cardinals who gave up his life and career.
Yep, Pat Tillman.
Right, Pat Tillman, to be in the military after 9/11 and what have you. People who gave so much, especially in World War II. My mother, of course, went out and sold war bonds. Mm-hmm. That's what she did. So you saw those things back in that day, and you see the sports guys, Hollywood group, directors, you know, all getting in the war because they believed in America. They believed in we were doing the right thing, and we were.
Yeah, and then you had the great Audie Murphy, who, you know, won the Medal of Honor, was the most decorated fighting man of World War II, and he came back and started an acting career, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, in fact, he played himself in the movie.
Yep.
To Hell and Back. Audie Murphy plays Audie Murphy in Hell and Back, which is a great movie. I mean, it proves, you know, somebody who's under 6 foot can really do something. I mean, he was amazing.
Yeah.
He was a great actor, died too young, but was the most decorated soldier in the history of the United States military until David Hackworth. Was it Hackworth? Yeah. Came about. And who died a couple of years ago of cancer, and we became friends, Lieutenant Colonel David Hackworth. But again, Audie Murphy became an actor, went over there, and nobody thought he had a shot at doing anything. He ended up being amazing.
Yeah. And again, that just that that legacy of people just coming back, and then just the impact they had here, the impact they had on our culture, you know, the way the country just got behind everyone and put 100% into that war effort. There's a podcaster, his name's Dan Carlin, who has this, this series, it's called Hardcore History. He did an excellent one on World War One called Blueprint for Armageddon, but he did one as well recently. It was called Supernova in the East, and it was about the war against Japan. And you know, he talks about how much of the fact that the war turning out the way it was never a foregone conclusion. Any side could have won this war, and it was just through that determination that we were able to do it.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely determination. You know, we were able to do it. Everybody was in the right place at the right time. Dwight David Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. I mean, just go through the whole process with those five-star generals that were out there. Yeah, you know, having to put up with Montgomery.
And everybody having to put up with MacArthur.
We had MacArthur, they had Montgomery. Go on from there. It was, but they all, all those personalities, and it was, you know, you look at D-Day, you have America, you have the Brits, you have the Canadians, you have all these people involved in it. It goes back to my father's statement on his desk. No telling what a man can accomplish if he doesn't worry who gets the credit.
Absolutely.
The lives that were lost that day on Omaha Beach, Sword Beach, Point the Hawk, and all through the system were amazing. And you have the people there in Normandy, France, St. Mary Glees, they remember all of them. The streets are named after some of these paratroopers that are there. The wife of the D-Day mayor actually took care of the grave sites. There are 15,000 grave sites there around St. Mary Glees. And the wife of the D-Day mayor took care of every one of those grave sites, stayed in contact with the loved ones back home, and birthdays and holidays and all of those things. And when the French and the Americans made the agreement for the American cemetery, and they allowed those at home, if you want to have your loved ones sent back, we can do that. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's 6,900 grave sites at the American cemetery, but there were 15,000 spread out around St. Mary Glees. And then she would go down to the American cemetery and take care of those grave sites until, you know, she passed. I mean, people talk about, well, the French don't love America. Well, you're in the wrong part of France. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you're just not in the right place in France. You got to understand the personality and so on and so forth. But those people at St. Mary Glees and throughout there, I mean, here's the first town freed by America on D-Day morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. And to think that every house in St. Mary Glees and through that whole area had a German living in it. It was occupied by a German. Mm. And we go in there and save them. People go see Saving Private Ryan. You know, if you'll see that movie, ever see it again, all the paratroopers were all headed that direction.
Right.
That's where they were going. Lafayette, just outside St. Mary Glees, you know, where you have one of those bridge culverts where they have the smallest or the deadliest small arms fire of World War II. You had 500 dead over 3 days. They had to call a truce to collect the bodies of the dead and the wounded, and then went back to fighting there at Lafayette. The history there is just simply amazing as you go through that area. And it'd be such a great thing to take your family vacation and take them to Normandy. kids cannot stop asking questions.
Yeah.
Once you get there.
And if you're coming into Paris, how far out is it about?
It's about a 3-hour drive.
Three-hour drive.
You can train.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, car in from there. But it's about 3 hours, and you can go up there and stay. Get a room. I mean, you don't have large hotels. If there's not like the Marriott hotels stuck in St. Mary Glees, small little towns, small little hotels, bed and breakfast, things of that nature. And you can train up there and spend a couple of days in that area. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that would make
to talk to people, a
great vacation if you go, if you head over there, and then if you head up to London and you do the Churchill War Rooms, another great place to go, because you get to see where, you know, a lot of the British strategy was formed and how they were living through the Blitz and through everything.
Oh yeah, it's the history is so amazing to be able to be there living it, you know, if you will, and see it and talk to people whose, you know, family members were, of course, affected by it. I was not last time, but it was just not too long ago. One of them said, visit St. Mary, because I go there almost every year anyway. So I can't remember which year it was, but one of the sons of the D-Day mayor gave me a cutting from a parachute from D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the D-Day mayor had three sons, and they're like bird's eye view just off the square, seeing all the paratroopers come in.
Yeah.
And they went out and collected stuff afterwards. So they just were hoarding everything they could find. So it was really, they gave me a cutting from a parachute from D-Day, which just, you know, wow, this is really something.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, there were so many different aspects from it. I mean, there was the guys getting off the boats, the paratroopers coming in. I had on Captain Dale Dye last year as well. And he's working on a movie, I think, about guys who were paragliding in.
Oh, the gliders that came in?
Yep.
The one thing you do not want to be in, mm-hmm, is a glider.
Right.
Because they flooded the fields,
mm-hmm,
and then the gliders would come in, hit the hedgerows.
Right.
So if you were in the front of a glider, yeah, if you were asked to be on a glider, you want to be in the back of the glider,
yeah,
not in the front of the glider, because the front of the glider was hitting hedgerows.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't know, a lot of those kids drown.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you really look at history, a lot of those who serve come from the mid part of this country, Midwest.
Right.
They're farm kids. They don't have to swim. A swim? Right. What's that? You know, we plant corn, wheat, you know, we pick. We don't swim. And so they had to actually, ultimately after that, they had to bring in, I talked to one day, a lifeguards to come in and give swimming lessons to the kids in the military, because they were losing kids in the military because they were drowning. So you had a kid in the Navy on a Navy ship, falls in the water. You know what's that all about?
And that's why we have swim calls today. Had to go through swim call with the Marine Corps, and I don't know if the Army does swim calls today, but the Marine Corps definitely does, the Navy does, and that's a really, really big point. I mean, a lot of these, and we have to remember that a lot of these kids, you know, just a few months prior, were at home where their biggest worry in the world was, you know, talking to girls and cars and coke and trying to get a drink of coke. And then, you know, a few months later, war breaks out. They're in the military, and then all of a sudden, they're there on D-Day, and that's how it was.
Yeah, I always kid with the kids on the USS Ronald Reagan, because the camos they wear, daily camos they wear, are like blue camos, mm-hmm, and I go like, so if you fall in the water, How do we find you?
Yeah.
you're camoed. You're the same color as the water. Best thing to do is not fall in the water. But again, they had to give swimming lessons because you had so many kids end up even 3 feet of water. You know, they always tell you about, you know, you buy a bucket and they always have a thing on there. A kid can drown in a bucket of water. Well, we had kids drowning in 3 feet of water or 2 feet of water in the fields that were flooded by the Germans.
Right. Right. Now, with the Reagan Legacy Foundation, you guys have put this walkway to victory together. And we talked a little bit about this, but why does the Reagan Legacy Foundation exist, and where can people go to learn more about it?
Well, you can go to walkwaytovictory.com. They'll take you right to that page, walkwaytovictory.com. The foundation website is reaganlegacyfoundation.org. ReaganLegacyFoundation.org. The foundation really started right probably in tune with the USS Ronald Reagan when she was christened and homeported here in California in San Diego. And I wanted to do something for the kids on the ship. And so we started a scholarship program where we provide $1,000 scholarships to the men and women who serve on the Reagan, but we provide $2,000 scholarships to family members who are left home who are also trying to better their education. And nobody else does that.
That's amazing.
Nobody else does that. We do that because if you're serving, you get some help from the government. If you're a family member back home, you get no help from the government.
Right.
So that's why we give $2,000 to a family member. And we started that back 2004, maybe. And we've done a couple of golf tournaments raising money for the scholarship program. But that's how it started. And then it just kind of evolved from there. What else can we do? And we moved on to Berlin. I visited Berlin just prior to the 20th anniversary of the fall of the wall and found out there was no mention of Ronald Reagan in Berlin.
Oh, right.
No mention at all.
Wow.
And I said, well, this is nuts. And so I put together a program with Frau Hildebrand and her husband, who passed away a couple of years ago, who own and run the Maurer Museum, also known as the Checkpoint Charlie Museum, where all the artifacts, how people escaped, the stories of that are all there at the Checkpoint Charlie Museum. And we put together the money and purchased basically a room at that museum. Dedicated to my father. And we dedicated that room the day before the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. So that was really kind of neat that way. Now, since then, we've been able to get a plaque in the ground at the between the Brandenburg Gate and the Adlon Hotel, commemorating my dad's speech of June 12, 1987. And then I think my father's foundation, Presidential Foundation, has worked with the Germans, and they're going to put a statue of my dad up on November 9th this year, which is the date that the wall, in fact, came down. So we began a process, started with the museum, but it took me 3 years banging on the heads of the Germans, which is the red, red government in Berlin, for them to finally say, okay, you could put a plaque on the ground. So we did that. Now my dad's foundation has taken over with the Reagan statue they're going to be putting up on November 9th, which is neat. We worked with the Poles to put a statue of my father and Pope John Paul in Gdansk, Poland. Mm-hmm. And then we started with Normandy. And it really started with the kids saying to me, you know, why is there an American cemetery at Normandy? I went, wow. Yeah. And so we began that work. In Normandy, we produced a couple of videos that we have that show at Normandy. We build a Ronald Reagan Center at the St. Mary Glees for people to have meetings on, you name it, freedom, I would hope. And that's what we do. And then we have the Brick Project, which is really the Brick Project is so important to us right now. So we've got the building built. We've got, you know, the stuff done in Berlin, statue in Poland. We still have the scholarship program and the BRIC program. And what we do is we raise money for the scholarship program. The BRIC program, however, the profits that we get from there that come back to the foundation, I mean, it's not huge, but the profits that we do get are turned back around into scholarship money for the kids that serve on the USS Ronald Reagan.
Outstanding.
So all the money is spent in one way or another.
Outstanding. And how big is the walkway right now?
Well, I mean, the walkway, if you go to St. Mira, they've got a lot of, there's a lot of walkway to cover. Mm-hmm. At the, because they have like four separate buildings. They have it with the gliders and everything, all these other things that they have at their at the museum there in St. Mary Glees at the Airborne. So the walkway takes up like one section, but there's a lot of sections because it's like four different buildings walking to and from and out, ingress, egress. So we have a lot of room to cover, and we're talking to him. We're there in July, and I said, what happens if we fill this all up? He said, well, we got a whole town.
Yeah.
So we went, okay, we're good with that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
And again, and if people don't know anybody, but they want to support the BRIC project, they, as I said, they can. It's on the web, reaganlegacyfoundation.org, and send a check to the Reagan Legacy Foundation. In the memo, just put BRIC project, and what we'll do is we will in fact find a find someone who did serve, of which we know many, mm-hmm. and have the names, and then you will get the thank you, and you will get all the information on that person that you sponsored a brick for to be put at St. Mary Glees.
That's amazing. And you mentioned it was $250 for a brick, right?
$250 for a brick or $500 if you want to put more information.
Awesome.
And this D-Day, on the 75th anniversary D-Day, we presented Susan Eisenhower with a brick for her grandfather.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh yeah, it was great. Great.
That's really great. The again, just there's so much there. It's the walkwaytovictory.com, the bricks, the $250 to $500, and that's a good price to be part of that project and
we're a 501c3, so
yeah.
It's tax deductible.
Yeah, and plus the money, the profits are going back to a really good cause and helping those sailors out on the USS Reagan.
Oh yeah, who's now? She's been in Tokyo, Japan now for, gosh, quite a few years.
Yeah,
she's been over there. The Obama Center there.
Yeah, I'm heading out there next year. I'm going to have to pay a visit.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to head out there for the Olympics. It's a little bit of a family tradition. We went down to Brazil the last Olympics to root for Team USA. We're going to head out there to Tokyo to root for Team USA. And then I'm definitely, I need to get out to Normandy.
If you get to Tokyo though, which is where the Olympics are, about an hour and a half south is where the USS Ronald Reagan sits.
Mm. Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to pay a visit out there because I've always wanted to see. I just love ships. They fascinate me. The technology, the massiveness of them. I mean, since I've been in the Marine Corps and heading out to San Diego to check the ports out there, and it just always fascinated me.
I was just at the MCRD big dinner the other night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They invited me down there.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, went there with my good friend David Webb. So I was at the MCRD dinner. I guess they're going to want me to come back next year also. But again, when you get on the USS Ronald Reagan, who's the first group you see? The Marines.
Yep.
You get on, you salute, boom, you get, and you're looking at the Marines. Before anything else, you see a couple of Marines.
Yep.
So what can I tell you? It's just,
We're everywhere. We're everywhere.
Yeah, you're everywhere. Yeah, but who was it that said who has it on their excuse me, on the challenge coin, my dad's statement about Marines never having to, you know, some people have to, some people worry all the time if they've ever accomplished anything.
Right. Marine doesn't Marines have to worry about that. Yeah. Problem. Yep.
That's Marine it. Doesn't have to worry about that. That's not an issue for a Marine.
Your father had such a way with words and such ability to inspire and just really carry the vision of the nation with his words.
I agree. I sit there because, as I said, I go to my dad's library. You can listen to the speeches he gave today, and they will affect you today as they affected you 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, just they will affect you that way. He did. He had a way with words. And as I tell you, when I go to the Young Americas Foundation and kick off their high school or college conferences up at my dad's ranch center, their ranch center by the ranch, as I tell them, I said, readers are leaders. You want to be, people talk about my father. My father led because he read. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so get off your cell phones and really start reading, because readers are truly leaders. And it's so important to know those things and have that knowledge. Because when my dad spoke, he knew what he was talking about. He didn't have to guess at it. He knew it, and he knew what he believed, and he knew why he believed it.
Yeah, that is such an important habit. I mean, we in the Marine Corps, we had the commandant's reading list, and at every rank, there's a set of books you're supposed to be reading. But I think, you know, even in daily life, the first hour of my day is always set aside, and I wake up early to do some reading. And mm-hmm. I think it's just such an important habit to have, because I mean, in our day and age, there are so many media channels, and through these media channels, you get various types of information. And the thing is this, if you're not up on your history, if you're not up on understanding what other people in other times went through, then you can lose a lot of perspective. And you end up looking at your own life and you say, oh, this is so hard, or oh, this is so difficult. But when you read about, you know, a young soldier during World War II and what they had to go through, or if you read about some of the great personalities out there, you know, that, like your father, or if you read about guys like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, who came to this country and worked his butt off and did everything he could to make it. I mean, there's so many different things you could learn just from reading. And it's a habit I think everybody needs to pick up.
Oh, absolutely right. It's how many stories you read about immigrants that came to the United States of America, and you know they weren't here for a handout; they were here for a leg up.
Right.
And they got that and changed the world. And we have too many people today, young people, spoiled, thinking, why can't I start at the top?
Right.
Well, it'd be nice to start at the top, but, you know.
Well, you don't want to, because you need to go through the work necessary in order to, if you don't go through the necessary work, you get to the top, guess what happens? You're not ready for what's going to come.
When I tell people, it's the way I was raised. When I tell people, my dad won the governorship of the state of California back in 1966, I was working on a trucking dock in Los Angeles, loading oil well freight from 5 at night to 1:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'd been for like 2 years. That's what I was doing. You know, when I was in college, you know, I was working at a car wash to get some extra money. I mean, it's just, you know, that's what you did. And because why would you do that? Well, because I wanted to, like, have a date on Friday night, or Saturday night, maybe, or maybe have dinner and pay the rent. You know, little stupid stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you were working on a trucking dock? I said, yeah, I was working on a trucking dock, loading oil well freight, 5 a.m. I was loading out a 40 footer with a 20 foot backhaul of rock bits and pipe for drilling. That's what I was doing every night, Monday through Friday. I think I was getting $2.10 an hour, Teamster's wages. You know? Yeah. But that's what you did.
Right.
And that's today you have people say, well, that'd be beneath me. Well, then that's your problem.
And that's the thing you got to remember. These guys who fought at places like Normandy and fought in the Pacific, they went through that and then they came back here and they worked. Right, they put themselves to work and there were no real handouts. You know, that's the way it was, and that's why they came back and transformed this country.
Yeah, thank God for them. Thank God for them. You know, my dad was my dad was the first one to as governor to invite those John McCain and that whole group that was sitting there for how many years at. Over at in Vietnam, invited them to the house for dinner, you know. And when everybody else was snubbing the Vietnam vets, he was embracing and bringing them in.
Yeah, yeah, he was a really really great man, and just hearing the stories of him when you walked in the room, you were in a meeting with him. He was the only person. You were the only person in the world. You were the only person that mattered. And
you did. He did 300 training films during the Second World War.
Hmm.
One of them was on parachuting, when he came out of the cavalry to join the army, you know, the only way to get in the army was to memorize the eye charts, because he was legally blind without glasses, and so, you know, he memorized the eye charts. So when he went in for his eye exam, joined the army, he asked him, you know, read line 4 and. A, B, D, you know, R, U. That's it. You're in. Mm-hmm. And couldn't even see it, but he had it memorized. That's how badly he wanted to serve. And he ended up retiring as a captain from the military the first time. Second time was a little bit heavier than that. He retired as a captain and did 300 training films. Everybody gave something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's... I mean, just the lessons from that generation, from the warriors, also the civilians who put the work into the factories to keep the machine going, everybody, the families, the Gold Star families. I mean, just an amazing lesson for us as Americans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for coming on again today. And I just want to acknowledge you for doing this work. It's so important that we have things like this. And it's so important that we remember and that we don't allow our history to get distorted, that we don't allow our history to get lost in the noise that's out there. And things like this, the Walkway to Victory, the work that the Reagan Legacy Foundation is doing, it really helps to remind us that there were Americans who saved the world, and the world we live in is the way it is. And I think we live in a better world than anybody could have imagined at that point because of the United States. It's because of that generation of Americans.
Thank you for letting me come on again, and thanks for the conversation. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to everybody out there, if you're looking to put a name on the Walkway to Victory, make sure it's walkwaytovictory.org, right?
No, walkwaytovictory.com.
Walkwaytovictory.com.
It's the ReaganLegacyFoundation.org, but it's walkwaytovictory.com. And it's something else to everybody know. Mm-hmm. Veterans Day is the 11th today. Mm-hmm. But we need to honor them tomorrow.
Exactly.
And the next day. And the next day. Our program runs 24/7, 7 days a week, all year long. We need to honor these every day.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, for those of us who have served, the greatest way of honoring them, and even if you have served, you still need to honor those who came before you. The greatest way of honoring them is by coming back and living an amazing life, putting your work in, putting yourself into position to keep this country as the greatest country in the world. And it's so important that we remember that. So, Michael, again, thank you so much. And to everybody out there, happy Veterans Day. To all the veterans out there, thank you for your service. To the families out there who stood behind those veterans, thank you as well. And we'll be back at you next week with some more awesome content. All right, ladies and gents, I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Mr. Michael Reagan. It is so important that we remember, those brave men who stormed those beaches, that we remember what they did, that we remember how they saved the world. And I think we're losing a lot of that. History isn't being taught like it once was in our schools. And I think that it's extremely important that we teach our children what happened. It's really up to us. Now, here's a big thing. You know, we're living this life, and as we're going about it, a lot of times it feels like we're falling into a script. It feels like we're doing the same thing day in, day out, week after week, month after month, year after year. And there's a lot of us who are out there who aren't happy, who aren't taking advantage of living in this amazing country and in this amazing time and place. That's why we created something here at the Warrior Soul Agoge called the Warriors Obituary Society. And the goal of this group is to empower its members to live absolutely epic lives, lives worthy of epic obituaries. The program starts with an 8-week development program. At the beginning, you are going to develop your vision. You're going to get very clear about what it is you want to accomplish. From there, we're going to work on specifics. We're going to develop specific goals. Then we're going to work on getting you to create your own personalized fitness plan, something that's going to keep you in shape, not just for a few months or a few weeks or anything like that. It's going to keep you in shape for the rest of your life. From there, we are going to work on your finances, getting you into financial shape, taking care of that debt, and getting you into a position where you can start investing and growing your money. And then from there, we're going to work on your dreams. If you want to have a specific career or a specific type of business, we're going to teach you things that can get you there. As we move along, you're going to have a live call each week with the group, and you're also going to be interacting daily with the other members on our private forum. We don't do anything over social media within the group. And the reason for that is because we don't want anybody looking over your shoulder, and we don't want you getting distracted by the million different notifications you get when you log on to social media. So if this is something that would interest you, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com and check it out. And if you've got any questions, feel free to email me over at chris@warriorsoulagogi.com. And I'll be happy to answer your questions or even get on a call with you if you want to talk about it. So thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you're enjoying the podcast, please consider heading over to iTunes and writing us a written rating and review. And also, please share these episodes out. And with that, guys, I'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content.